Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 163 for comics originally released on September 22, 2010. So we're getting near the end of the third quarter here, so kicking us off with DC is Titans 27. And man, I'm hoping it's getting to the third quarter on this title too, because, as a Titans fan, I'm not really crazy about them using the name Titans for this title.
Yeah, this is not the Titans. I mean, it's, you see Red Arrow on the cover, and sure, he's with Jade, but I mean, it's essentially, and it's been for several issues, it's been Deathstroke and a bunch of bad guys. It's kind of like Secret Six without the charm. I think that's the way I would characterize it.
It's funny, because in my notes, I had the exact same thing. It's essentially another Secret Six sort of a series, just not as good. Now, technically, half this team have been, quote-unquote, real Titans at some point in time. Arsenal, Red Arrow, or, Speedy, whatever name you want to call them this week, Osiris and Deathstroke have all been actual members of the actual Titans franchise team, at some point. So there's a certain amount of justification for using the title, but it's not a superhero team. It's, again, another group of essentially villains, even with Arsenal thrown in there, because he's kind of not at a heroic point these days. I mean, the series itself isn't horrible, but if you're really into this kind of stuff, you probably ought to read Secret Six. I found this issue to be very uneven on the art side, solid in places, sketchy on the other. Having two artists, I think, was a large part of that. It was functional art, and it did tell the story effectively, but man, I was underwhelmed by the art. You look at the front page, we got some stuff kind of introducing the villains or whatever at the top, and the bottom kind of panel, we've got the Titans, minus Arsenal, who's off doing his own thing, the five members. And I'm like, okay, there's Deathstroke, there's Osiris, there's Tattooed Man, there's Jade or Cheshire, and then there's that girl in red. Who's she? And I couldn't remember. So I'm digging through the rest of the thing to go find if she's even used. Her name is Cinder, she is a member of this team, and she is barely in this issue.
Yeah, I hadn't been reading Titans, and I read all the way from the Villains for Hire, and then issue 24, 25, 26, 27. So she's featured more prominently in those other one. I might have had the same thing if I had not read those other issues, like, immediately preceding reading this issue.
Yeah. Well, this was one where it was very much kind of a middle, or not quite ending, but more of a middle chapter of a book. We start in the middle of the action and stuff like that, so they don't really go take the time to fully introduce all the characters. They at least mention her by name, but when they do that later, as she's, vaporizing somebody, the art was such that, it was in more kind of that sketchy phase where it wasn't as clear what was going on sometimes. And I felt in that respect, I mean, not only did the character get the short end of the script, but the art, while technically doing what it needed to do, didn't really highlight and pull stuff out as effectively as maybe it could have.
I'm really not... I don't like this series, put it that way. it's like, it's not the Titans, in my opinion. I wasn't loving the previous run on Titans, but, so I can understand them wanting to change it up, because I suspect that it wasn't doing that good. That's why they felt they needed to change it up, but...
Well, they had to change it up because all those characters became Justice Leaguers.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, this, they could have pulled in other heroes. You know what I mean? It's like...
That's a fair point.
They make this seem... that other run seems like a masterpiece in comparison to this. I am really... Whenever I have to go to our definitions for ratings, it's bad. And I'm struggling between a 1 and a 2 on this one.
Wow.
I can't go all the way down to a 1 because I can't say that it's a poorly executed comic. And, you know, I didn't really struggle to read through it because, you know, realistically, the storytelling was clear. It was nice, serviceable art. I disliked it a lot, but that doesn't mean that it was a problem with the actual execution of the comic book. You know, there was no execution problem here.
It wasn't incomprehensible is the point, yeah.
I just disliked the story. I, you know, Arsenal being back to being a drug addict, you know, not a big fan of that. This whole, you know, Bliss mining operation and, you know, the whole thing was just pretty repellent to me. Just put it that way. It's just like, you read Secret Six and arguably those characters are much worse bad guys than these.
Totally. Because almost every one of these except
Gail Simone writes a relatively, you know, compelling story about them that I read it and I don't feel dirty having read it. You know, it's like this one is just, my Lord, this is terrible.
Well, you know, it's funny because even though, aside from Red Arrow, these are all villains on this Titans team, a number of them have acted in heroic manners enough. You know, Deathstroke was a hero for a while, Osiris, of course, Tattooed Man recently. So, you're right, these are more heroic than the Secret Six, but because it doesn't have the charm, the style, the better dialogue, punchier dialogue and stuff like that, these guys feel a lot more, I don't say hardcore evil or whatever, but less likable than the Secret Six.
Yeah, I find these, no character in this book is likable to me. I don't like anybody in this book. You know what I mean? It's like, I started reading it again. I got a stack of it, you know, and I'm like, okay, we're going to review it. I'll read this big stack. And it's like, I should pull it back off my list. This is terrible. You know, and again, not terribly executed. There's nothing wrong with the execution of it. It's just, I personally don't like the story.
No,
and that's nothing, you know, maybe it is something about, you know, the writer's choices in how he's telling the story, but he's like telling a story about not nice people. And he's not, Eric Wallace, he's not been able to find a way to get me to care about them, which again, I'm making the comparison because it's another DC bad guy book. Gail Simone has very successfully done with Secret Six.
Well, let's toss another comparison out there for a moment, because I think this also could be seen similar to Thunderbolts over at Marvel, particularly
True.
During the time where Hawkeye was a member. So another Archer type stuff. The difference
or even
was
Dark Avengers. You know,
well, hang on. The difference was back in Thunderbolts with Hawkeye, he was trying to turn the team around. So you had that dynamic in the team there of the good guys trying to make the bad guys good. Whereas
True.
Here we have the opposite dynamic, where it's almost like the bad guys are corrupting Arsenal even further. Not that they're really having to do much with his drug habit and stuff, but still, you know. So that right there makes the book a bit more of a downer than really I think it needs to be.
I don't know. I can't even put my finger on it, but now that you bring up the Marvel books, it's like I can even read Dark Avengers that had really bad guys, and I was not as disinterested and turned off to the characters as I am by this book.
Well, I think a lot of it is there is no team dynamic here yet.
Yeah.
And it doesn't pop in any way, shape, or form. I mean, really, for me, this book is a 3 out of 5 and a low 3 at that. I would say it's an average book. There are a couple of places where if I were the editor, I'd have thrown the art back for a little more cleanup just because I'm picky that way. But really, the only people I could recommend this book to is somebody who's fans of these specific characters. And only hardcore fans in that case, too. I mean, if you're really into Deathstroke or Osiris or, you know, some of these others, you might want
to. I mean, if, like, you have to have every appearance of Deathstroke or Arsenal or something, then, yeah, get it.
Well, you might want to get it. I'm not even going to say you definitely should get it.
True.
Because this, to me, is an expendable book in the DC lineup. They could end this book tomorrow, and I don't think most people would even notice. And that's unfortunate. So where are you going to come down on the rating?
2.
This book needs work, and I think the problem is basically the general direction. having two artists with sufficiently different art styles didn't help it either.
Yeah. So anyway, let's turn the table and go to Fantastic Four number 583 by Jonathan Hickman with Steve Epting joining on the art. I am loving Fantastic Four. Now, this is another book, though, that's very subjective because you have to there are a lot of people who don't care for Fantastic Four, right? And I can understand that. It's got a certain dynamic to it that is not going to be, you know, it's not like the big action-oriented book. It's more character and story-driven as a rule. Jonathan Hickman has really captured that, and he's turned Valeria Richards into one of my favorite characters.
Oh, totally. She rocks.
In this issue, she was great, you know.
She was the lead character here, yeah.
Yeah, I loved this issue.
I got to be honest, I had mixed feelings on this issue. Now, I agree with you entirely that Hickman has just been doing an outstanding job on this series. Epting is knocking it out of the park on the art. So creative team, top notch, and they are just clicking with this material. Again, like you were saying, how Hickman's been treating Valeria. She is just a fun character. She's well handled, and there's a realism to the character, even though she's this child prodigy genius sort of a thing that makes Reed Richards look kind of stupid at times. There's a believability to it. But honestly, I found this particular issue a little confusing in places. You know, we jump in the middle of the FF on this fight in one place, then we're really following Valeria for most of the issues, and there are a couple of places where Hickman is shifting between scenes, because really I think it was the transitions that were causing some of my bewilderment in places. He's moving back and forth in time. He's not telling the story linearly. There are a couple of places, like when we first get to Latveria, we see a shot of Doom, and then presumably a flashback panel, and there's stuff like that that I think if this had been like a TV series and it was, you know, played out, you know, with some motion and a few other things they could do there, when they're going to a flashback, it might have been a little clearer. When they were just jumping in time just for, you know, the commercial break sort of a thing, it might have been clearer. Or if I'd just read the previous issues.
I think that might have been a key because, again, I was behind a bit on FF, and I read about 4 issues in a row.
Well, I mean, some of this is we see Valeria with Reed's bridge device or whatever, and she's like, ooh, Mom's not going to be happy. And again, the way that scene just played out was wonderful. Hickman, again, doing a great job. Then we see Valeria over with Doom. Then we flash back to her actually, you know, doing her little adventure between those two scenes. And it's like, why not just put those in order? Why not have a little dialogue on Valeria's little adventure or whatever? I felt like in places I was missing a level of the story. And maybe I was just tired. But I think he was being a little more cryptic or coy than he usually is. Because even with all of these issues I had with the story, I really enjoyed it. Even the parts that I felt were a little more cryptic than they needed to be, I thought he did some great stuff here. And, you know, again, I may sound like I'm really coming down on this issue, but even with all of that, I still consider this a 4 out of 5. Highly, highly recommend reading Hickman's FF run. Just not using this issue as a jumping on point. Because I think a new reader to FF, even if they're familiar with the characters, and let's face it, most comic book fans understand the basic premise of the FF. I don't think this is a good issue for people to really get introduced to Hickman's run of Fantastic Four.
I would agree with that. Now, I gave this issue a 5 out of 5. And mostly because it's a Valeria spotlight issue, and I love Valeria. But that said, if this was the first issue you picked up, I don't think you would get that from it. Because you have to kind of see how the characters developed. So I would really recommend going back to the beginning of Hickman's run.
Totally.
If you want to jump on and try FF.
Well,
I was really, really enjoying Steve Epting's art on this issue.
Oh, yeah. And again, Epting is clicking with his material. It's just some beautiful artwork. And witness how many pages are able to go with no dialogue or minimal dialogue, which effectively would be used as almost sound effects. And all of the story is being done through the art. that's something that, you know, Epting is fully capable of conveying what's going on and doing so both effectively and subtly in places. Whereas I would say the art team on Titans that we just read could not have carried that off. Now, I would agree with you that people who should be reading Pikmin's run should do it from the beginning and stuff, but I would say anyone who is remotely interested in the Fantastic Four in any way, shape, or form should be doing that.
Right.
This, I think, is going to be one of those definitive runs on Fantastic Four. It to me, it's a high watermark. There are a couple other creative teams. When Wade was on it a couple of years back, certainly the John Byrne run way back when, that people are, you know, just look back on and say, wow, this was a really good run of Fantastic
I just
Four.
Hope he stays on it for a long time. You know, it's really good, but it's going to fall short in the classic runs mode if it only goes for a year or so.
And I would agree with that, but I would say he should stay on it for as long as he can tell stories of this caliber
right.
or better, and no longer. If he's out of ideas, he should get the hell off the book. But he's been on it for... How long has he been on this? He's been on it for a couple of arcs, so better part of a year at least.
Right. I'm just saying, I would like to see him rack up a good 50, 60 issues.
Oh, totally.
Book.
And I think
know, just
he
can. Like, you know, you look at like the Bendis run on Daredevil that, you know, stands up to any of the Daredevil runs. If he had done a year on that book, I don't think it would have been regarded like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can tell a good story arc or, you know, one or two trades worth of material, and that's telling a good story. It's not making a mark as a classic contributor to the characters if you don't do a big chunk of it. And I think, you know, like you said, I mean, sure, it would have to be good stuff, but I think he has it in him.
Oh, totally.
If he actually did a good, long, healthy run on this book, this would stand shoulder to shoulder with the top eras of FF ever.
My feeling is what he's been doing so far has been not quite warm-up stories or planting seeds or whatever, but some of that. And I mean, because he hit the ground running with some great stuff with that Reed Richards stuff that they're referencing back here. But he's building his own contributions to the FF world and slowly kind of expanding that and playing around in that. And there's going to come a point where he's got kind of that critical mass of backstory he's built where things are just going to start flying even faster and better than they are now. I totally think he could be going on this book for easily 5 years, possibly 10 if he were of a mind to. And if he can be telling stories this good, sooner or later the comic book reading audience is going to realize that and start looking at this book. Because it is not selling anywhere near where the quality of the material, I think, deserves to be selling.
And I think they need to slap the world's greatest comic magazine back on the cover.
I totally think these runs, you know, Hickman's work on it totally would warrant that, because there have been times where it's had that banner and I'm like, really?
Yeah. Leather jacket era coming to mind.
Some of that I didn't mind.
It wasn't the greatest stuff, though.
No.
It was okay.
There was a point where it was, and there was a long point where it was just consistent quality. Little above average, but only a little above average. And again, long ongoing stories and stuff, but one of those that you look back and say they told a lot of interesting stories, but none that were just brilliant, none like we're getting now. And it was in kind of a sustaining mode, if you will, whereas this, I think, is in a potential growth mode in terms of quality of story, again, the material being introduced into the mythos, and I'd like to see the sales follow suit. So anyone listening remotely into the Fantastic Four, who's not reading it right now, go find Hickman's first trade of it. Go read it. I think you'll like it.
And then our last book, we've got Elephant Men, number 27, which is part 4 of a 7-issue arc. So we're kind of right in the middle of things in this arc.
Even in the middle of questionable things, yeah. Since that's the name of the arc.
That's right. And, you know, the one thing I like about Elephant Men, it's not just one thing, but, you know, it has this whole world that's been built up. Now, as with the Fantastic Four, this would not be a good first issue to pick up and read.
Agreed.
you know, you don't want to just, you know, pick this up. You're jumping in the middle of a storyline, but it's a great story and it's a great world. I think it's a unique vision in comics, and it's why I like books outside of the Marvel and DC realm. You know, this is the exact kind of thing I'm looking for when I move outside of Marvel and DC. I look for something that is unique and something that's, you know, showing a really compelling vision or story world created by somebody. And this is Richard Starkings' world. He's had a lot of different artists that he works with on this, but he's telling a really compelling story here. You know, it's kind of a future, dark future set in Los Angeles in 2259. That's the mainline story. And it's after these elephant men have assimilated into kind of human society. Now, that's set after this war that had happened in Europe, and they, you know, have these flashbacks occasionally to 20 years or so prior. But, you know, Starkings puts the year and stuff. And another thing that I really like that he's doing in this, which is a throwback to classic comics, is he's got the little footnotes of, you know, see Elephant Men 23, you know, see issue 17, you know, kind of thing that lets you, you know, just gives kind of a callback to, you know, where they're referring to in the story. And I always liked that when I was reading the old Marvel and DC comics, and they have gone away from that, you know, just kind of like cut you loose when they make references to events in past issues. I really enjoy that aspect. It's just a little aside, but I'm appreciative that Starkings has kind of brought that back to life in this story. But this current artist that we've got, this new guy, Axel Medellin, he's pretty good. You know, I'm liking his art on this issue, and I really like this. If somebody wants to read Elephant Men, though, I would go back. They've got he's got these massive collections, and the volume one of that is the place that you can start, and it's out in hardcover and softcover, so not that much money, you can pick that up. But he's at a lot of the conventions too. He's the nicest guy, and he's usually got artists at his booth. He's got the big Elephant Men banner. You know, stop up and say hi at one of the conventions. Really nice to talk to them.
I would agree. If you're going to read Elephant Men, start at the beginning. And it's not even that hard to find all of the single issues to do that. If you're going to go the single issue route, I recommend doing a little research, making sure you know what covers go with which issues to not buy duplicates, because a lot of these issues have duplicate covers, which gets a little confusing at times. I went, tracked down all the issues. It took me a little while to find, I think, issue 2, but all the others were a snap to find for the most part. So I've read, and I did this about 2-3 weekends ago, all the Elephant Men. I'd caught up on my reading. I had a Sunday afternoon. I went through about 30, 36 issues, whatever, starting with the Hip Flask stuff and just plowing all the way through. I totally agree, Bob. This is great art, excellent story. Starkings has created a cool world that's got a you know, contained logic and just some fun stuff. I did find that, you know, when reading all that, there are a couple of things here and there that he essentially kind of retconned into the story. Basically, things like, you know, when the homing beacons were needed, they got added to the story, but nothing that contradicted the origin of the Elephant Men as told, but just kind of weren't in there either. So, and I'm cool with that, because since it's got, this is Starking's world. Everything that's in it is coming out of his mind. So if he later says, ooh, this is a good idea, let me go kind of pretend that it always happened and insert that into the story, hey, I'm good with that. But it's one of those things that it would have been cool if, you know, because one of the early Hip Flask things kind of goes into detail on their origin and stuff. You know, it would have been cool if it had been in there, but not a big deal. I did like how this issue, as quite a few have had, highlights the essentials of the backstory of the Elephant Men. You know, because they're focusing on the Crocodile Men here. And when they do that flashback to the war era, it's like, okay, here's what's going on. Here's where these guys were done. And you don't get the full backstory, but you get the essentials. You get what you need to understand the events of this issue. And there's a certain accessibility to this series that I think is really good. Now, this issue, middle story, middle chapter of a story, they did a good job kind of highlighting the past events. I agree with you that the footnotes of, you know, where certain things happened, really important, particularly since this is the fourth part of a, or fourth chapter of a story, and they're referencing stuff from the first, the third, etc. I like it because it's like, oh yeah, now I remember where that happened. Or if I hadn't read it, it'd be like, oh, that's why I don't remember this happened, but if I want to learn more, I know where to go. So I totally agree, the footnotes are really nice to have. While this did a good job of kind of recapping the prior events, it's hard for any single issue to really sum up the essence of a bunch of characters. And we've got a ton of important characters here. We've got Sahara, we've got Hip Flask, we've got Ebony, we've got, you know, two or three others and stuff. And if I had read this issue, just this issue, and not the run, I'd have come out of this saying, okay, it's got some cool ideas, but I didn't really care about the characters, because I hadn't spent the time to get to know the characters. So this is why I personally think it's really important for, you know, a book like this, a strong run like Hickman's FF or something, to read from the beginning as much as practical. And in these cases, I think it's highly practical. Because then by the time you get to the later stories, you've got the connection to the characters, and it just makes the plot relevant to you. And, you know, it's... You're doing yourself a disservice if you don't take that time to do that.
He's weaving a lot of story elements together here, too. And, you know, that's another part that, you know, you could, you're going to miss, even just outside the characters, you're going to miss some of the richness of what the story is that he's telling if you don't kind of have all those points, because he's referring back to things here and there, and you're seeing things from maybe different viewpoints and different angles at different times, too.
Yeah, yeah. Or different takes on here's what happened and here's what I thought of it kind of a thing, too. And really, I mean, we're only talking about 36 issues all said and done at this point. I was able to do that in about a three-hour chunk. So it's not that big of a time commitment either. On the art, I thought this was really good art, but not as good as, say, LeDron or Moritat or some of the other guys that have been on Elephant Men. But frankly, those guys have set such a high bar for the art quality that even somebody who's not as good is still head and shoulders above what we're seeing in a lot of Marvel and DC books.
I mean, you know, Moritat, you know, it's like style. I love Moritat's art. You know, he's probably my favorite one. I love Marion Churchland.
Yeah.
But this, the new guy, I mean, especially he puts in these nice sample pages. If you look at that black and white sample page from Axel that he's got there, and then look at the color that's added to it, that's a really nice page, you know.
Well, and that's a good point, because I think if we had coloring quite of that quality on this issue, that might have helped pop it just a bit, just enough more.
Yeah, the coloring here is a little flat.
Yeah, but one thing I'll say about Elephant Men and Hip Flask and all that stuff is you're never going to be disappointed on the art. At a production level, at a base art quality level, if this is going to be a four or above, bar none. And there's so many places over at Marvel and DC right now where I feel they're not spending the time or the effort on the art on some of the books. Again, Titans that we just talked about, where it's a little disappointing, a little unclear. And I love having a book that is sci-fi, has some cool sci-fi concepts, some just incredibly, you know, solid, talented, you know, enjoyable art. Some issues to me are at that 6 out of 5 on the art kind of a thing. Just because it's like, wow, this is so beautiful to look at. And the singular vision of the universe by Starkings here, all of that's just making it for an excellent package. This is the kind of issue where, again, since we're in the middle of a story, I think you get what you need to understand the story. I don't think you get the emotional connection and resonance with the characters to fully appreciate the story. So while somebody technically probably could use this as a jumping on point, I would not recommend that. But this is a series I think is completely worth taking the time, hunting down the back issues or trades, which shouldn't be that hard, and reading it. This is good stuff.
Yeah. Now the trade paperback version of Volume 1, it's $20. You know, it's $20 for the soft cover, 312 pages. That is a deal. That is a really good deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you hadn't read it and you're thinking, you know, how, you know, these guys are talking about it, you know, we've talked about it before, at least I have, you know, it's like, give it a try. Now, before we go on, you know, this new series, Charlie Loves Robots, that they've got 2 pages of in the back. That was really fun. I wish there was more than 2 pages, but you know what? Even the 2 pages that we had, it gave me something. You know, it was.
Elephant Man does a good job using kind of the, I don't say the surplus pages, but I mean in this issue we get the letters page, we get the 2 sample pages, the penciled and the colored from the artist. We get some shots of what they did over in San Diego. Then we get this 2-page, you know, backup story or whatever. This could have just been house ads, and the fact they give us, you know, content, I really appreciate, and I enjoyed this story. With the Charlie Loves Robots, they did one or two backup features with the iFrog or whatever that I thought were just fun. They used the extra pages well. I give them high marks for that.
And I'm not, you know, it's like that's something that you get by reading the issues, because you're not going to get these, you know, little, you know, it's like basically they got convention pictures of them at the different cons, you know, like I'm suspecting that Charlie Loves Robots, maybe when the whole series is done, they might do like a collection of that, but it's not going to be in the Elephant Men trade, I would imagine, you know, but just as a general rule, the series is a 5 out of 5. This specific issue for me, 4. It's a strong 4. I really liked it. But Elephant Men as a series is 5 out of 5, one of my top 10 books,
I would
top 10
definitely
favorite
agree.
things coming out.
It's a 5 out of 5 and something that more people need to be reading. Anyone who's into sci-fi and comics needs to be reading it. It's I'm going to say one of the best sci-fi things out there. My only disappointment with it is Hip Flask is a 5-issue series, miniseries. It's not really a miniseries, it's a series of 5 connected one-shots, of which only 3 have come out. And the last one came out a good couple of years ago. So that storyline is taking forever to finish, and frankly, it's a really cool storyline, so I'd like to see more of that. So, you know, when my only complaint is they haven't gotten enough of the stuff out yet, I mean, that's a good complaint to have about a book.
Yeah, you want more, you know.
Yeah.
I want more too, and you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly that this is a book that more people need to be paying attention to, because it's really good comics.
Yeah, it certainly took me too long to get around to reading it.
So, anything else going on this week?
See, I read everything else that came out this week. Let me scan through and see if there was anything that was particularly interesting. I found Garrison's 6th issue to be interesting. It implies there could be more in that world to be told. I don't know if they're going to do that or not, but certainly I'd be open to that. Hulk 25, 1st issue, essentially starring the Red Hulk in his new status quo, was good. Power Girl, they continue to completely dump the old status quo for the new one, and I got mixed feelings on that.
Walking Dead, the only new comic I read this week, you know, is kind of one of my top of the stack books, was the new issue of Walking Dead. It's like, well, people were getting bored with them being in the city. I think you're seeing the beginnings of how that's gonna come to an end, right? In this issue, you knew it was going to happen.
Oh yeah,
It's just,
whenever
you
he
know.
puts them into a stationary location, there's he usually starts that ticking clock of, you know, I'm not going to let him rest too long, you know. And that Kirkman's kind of a cruel writer that way to his readers. You know it's coming, kind of a thing. It's a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
You hear the click, 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 click as you go up the thing, and you know you're going to go in a deep dive and a couple of swerves, and he delivers on that. So it'll be interesting to see what the status quo is whenever the next, you know, boiling point hits and they move on from that. But he's continuing to do a decent job over there. So, anything else? Does that do it?
Does it for me?
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Green Arrow #4 from DC, Atlas #5 from Marvel, and Pilot Season: The Asset from Top Cow.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.